And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, and welcome to Nerdy Notions. I'm Sasha Kaplan. And today,
Time out. Why do you sound like you're about to kill somebody? Like, it's like, yes, I am here to kill you all. With this following
move. I think that's a fair statement considering I'm about to kill some definitions of that people have about this movie. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. But today we are talking about the penultimate ending of Phase 2.
No, it's not.
It's not the penultimate ending?
Mm-mm, because the ending of Phase 2 was the next movie.
All right. Anyway, the
which we'll explain at the end of this episode why.
Yes. So it's the almost ending of the MCU, but it is the ending of the Avengers story of the MCU.
For Phase 2.
So with that,
For Phase 2.
For Phase 2, yes. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like 10 pages of notes for this movie. So probably more. So you're welcome.
So what's going to happen now is I'm just going to mute my microphone and I'm just going to let Sasha talk the entire time, not let her get a chance to drink some water, which she should be doing right now. And she's on her own. She's screwed. She's just 10 pages, game over. In the words of what I said on that episode of Power Dorks a couple episodes ago, it's game over, man. The referee lifted the arm and the arm is dropped. Just call for the bell.
So I think I want to talk, like, I think we'll leave some of the behind the scenes stuff for the end because it's really important because there's several things that are brought up in the movie that I've seen throughout the fandom about this movie that need to be addressed and dismantled. So let's dive in. Joss Whedon production. Where is my first note here? Okay.
It's right there. As I point at my keyboard because I don't have your notes in front of me.
Let's talk about where we left off with our heroes. Thor had taken on the idea of living on Earth. Steve and Sam were out looking for Bucky, and Tony destroyed all his suits, and Banner exists. Oh, and Natasha was looking for new covers and figuring out who she was. I think it's important to note that Natasha, I think partially because she's a spy, but also because different directors have different interpretations of her, she kind of has different versions of her depending on the director. Like, there's a Favreau version of Black Widow. There is a Russo version of Black Widow. And there's definitely a Whedon version of Black Widow. And we'll get to that. So... So we open on Loki's staff, actually, and is some base that is about to be under attack. And this is kind of the leftover. We're at the same base we saw at the after credit scene of Winter Soldier. And we see Wanda and Pietro, who we will come to know as Wanda and Pietro, kind of just standing there looking out into the void. And Mike is looking at me and, like, eating popcorn or something as if, like, this is entertaining for him, which I'm glad. Oh, I'm sorry. He's eating... Lifesaver gummies because he's an adult, children. So Hawkeye.
You're damn right, I'm an adult. Damn it, I'm going to eat my gummies.
Shush. So we see the Avengers and Hawkeye and Nat are in a forest. Then Thor is fighting some dudes, and they're all kind of like fighting these different agents. And this is actually we find out that this is like remnants of a Hydra bases that were kind of hidden under that shield umbrella. Hey, hey, Winter Soldier. So Tony says something like, Tony says like, oh shit, or something like that. And Steve says language. We learned that like there is a base that Hydra is being used by a guy named Strucker who's like in charge of it. And they're going, and the Avengers are going after the staff. And something that should be interesting to note is there is a bit of use of slow-mo in this movie. And usually, particularly when it comes to speedsters, as is the case with like Days of Future Past or Apocalypse, I cannot st- stand the use of slow motion. But here it is used very specifically for specific reasons. In this case, first and foremost, it is used to kind of there's a great scene where all of the Avengers are attacking and it slows down just enough so you can see all of them in a line, which I thought was a very nice shot. But again, I'm looking at this with different eyes now than I did when it first came out. When it first came out, it actually kind of bothered me because, again, I hate the use of slow motion. But in this case, it wasn't bad. So let's see.
And I got to piggyback off something real quick. We got to backtrack. So as you can hear me opening up another thing of Lifesaver gummies in the background. Oh, no, a gummy just fell. As you said, the thing about Captain Rogers saying language, as this is going on, they're all talking about what they need to do and where they need to go. And Tony goes, wait, hold on. Language?
Everybody freaks out that Steve said that Steve had like a negative reaction to somebody saying a bad word. And this is carried out throughout the entire film. And
continuity at its finest.
Like,
Sasha just grabbed her head going like, Michael loving the continuity of this one thing is so just like, going to blow your mind.
This is something that we'll go into when it comes to characterization, because I think Russo's and Whedon both see Steve Rogers as two very different characters, and that shows. For the Russos, I think Steve was a guy who was very much that man out of time, in the sense that like he had to adjust to the nuanced and politics and surveillance and problematic nature of the new world. Whereas Whedon sees Steve as the guy from the old world who is still stuck on the old ways of doing things. And I think both are kind of, I think Whedon's wrong. Like, we'll get into the Whedon being wrong on so many things about this movie. But let's continue. So we see Strucker is talking about how the Avengers are coming, and he's talking to Dr. List, who, again, we saw both of them at the end of Avenger or Winter Soldier. And List is like, well, maybe we should deploy the twins. And Strucker's like, no, there's no time for that. Like, our men will take care of that. We don't need to worry about it. You need to worry about it. So, and Strucker's like, in typical Hydra fashion, is perfectly willing to sacrifice anybody he needs to protect the scepter or whatever it is he's got going on. Meanwhile, Tony deploys something called the Iron Legion to like protect the civilians in the nearby town. And in very like, it kind of reminds me of like Kosovo and the Bosnian Wars, in the sense that like, just with the climate and because there's a lot of like Serbian language within the city, gives me that vibe. So they're not happy to see this like Tony Stark like material in it. Like, yay, we're safe, but it's Tony Stark, like screw him. So Strucker talks more, like basically he talks like a typical America hater that out and obviously an outright Nazi. And he has a very Stalinist look on this of like, no surrender, sacrifice to the last man. But the twins vanish and decide to go after the Avengers into the fight. And they did a really interesting job with Pietro, in how they have like a blue streak that like a bluish grayish streak that kind of follows him to show off his speed, which I really like. Very reminiscent of how he was portrayed in the comics. And we'll get to what the comic they took the characterization of Wanda and Pietro from, because that is a much bigger problem than anything else. So let's see. So Hawkeye proves no match for Pietro. Pietro kind of like hits Steve. And the Hulk takes out a bunker that was blasting Hawkeye previously. Hawkeye gets a little burned. Tony manages to disable this kind of like digital shield thing that was protecting the base where Hydra is. And it should be noted that Jarvis is communicating through a satellite, which is kind of cool. So Tony Stark is so fancy. He has his own satellite now, guys. Like, he's that posh.
But that's actually going to play into a factor later.
Yes, it does. Which is why I'm establishing it now. So Tony disables the shield. There's a really good shield and hammer like action of like Steve's shield and Thor's hammer and just like the waves that they create. So that was kind of fun to watch. So Tony teases Cap, and then Tony disables some bad guys, and he leaves the suit. So Steve is, they're all communicating via like earwigs or whatever you call them. The little, what do you call them, that go in your ear?
Earbuds,
thank you. And so Tony leaves his suit and actually goes, and he's like, oh, I hope there's a secret passage. Like, yes, there's a secret passage. And what we find is that not only do we find the scepter, but we also find one of those Chitauri monsters left over. So we know that Hydra siphoned off all of the materials that S.H.I.E.L.D. collected after the invasion of New York.
Which we find out how some of this happened a few movies later. Spider-Man Homecoming?
Oh, yes, you're right. I was actually thinking about that opening scene when I was saying it, but I forgot the time. Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's like literally like I think 5 movies later or something like that, or 6 movies later.
So. Yep, and then we see Wanda in the corner, and she kind of puts something in Tony's head that kind of makes him look like the Chitauri like monster is attacking him.
But then he has the vision.
No, that happens later.
No, that happens in that room. Because remember, Tony is the first one, they get the vision.
You're right. So then we see this vision of Avengers being all dead, and like Steve sees, like Tony sees Steve dying. He's like, you could have saved us.
And this is also the first time we see the shield broken.
Yes, it is.
And then like the Hulk actually is technically alive, but like he has bars through his heart and stuff like that. Like he's been stabbed through.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Somebody
has a whole bunch of arrows in their body too. It's probably Hawkeye.
I think it was
ironic.
Irony.
So the secret door, Tony goes in, no suit. Nat turns off the Hulk. There's like a little lullaby with some hand stroking.
The sun's going down, Sasha. The sun's going down.
Getting real low. Yeah, hope we never hear that line again. By the look on my face, I know it will come back up. So Cap fights with Strucker about S.H.I.E.L.D. Strucker is basically arrested for illegal human experimentation. Wanda hits Cap. Steve is knocked out, and Strucker is knocked out as well. So let's see. So Tony hears the voice of Cap in his head that's like, and this is like, so this is not. This is plaguing on Tony's fears. A lot of people at the time speculated this was like a hint at Infinity War. And having now seen Infinity War, I would say like no, it's not, because none of them actually die in Infinity. They're the ones that are left behind. But it's plaguing on Tony's fears and on his PTSD. So Wanda and Pietro, which is really interesting, they actually let Tony take the scepter. And it's really not clear why they let him take it.
Yeah, they did. Because they asked Wanda, Pietro asked Wanda, why did she let him go? And she goes, because I've seen his visions, and he's the one that's going to be their downfall.
Oh, you're right. That makes sense.
All right, I'm muting my mic back. I'm going back to Candy now.
Mm-hmm, as if your mic was ever... Oh, wow, it actually is muted. Okay. So the Avengers are
Sasha now learns that when a microphone has a red slash through it, it's muted.
I knew. I just didn't notice it before. Shush, stop interrupting me. So they are back on the Quinjet. They're on their way. And Banner is like, not okay. Like, you killed a whole bunch of Nazis. Why are you cranky? And he's really not dealing with the violence caused by the Hulk and Nat or somebody who, like, turns to Thor, and Thor is like, oh yes, the fields are covered in the blood of your enemies, and they all just give him this look like, you're not helping. And Thor's like, I don't know how to come back from this. So we go back to Avengers Tower. I forgot that existed for a hot second. And we meet Dr. Cho. Dr. Helen Cho.
Okay, sorry to do this to you real quick, but this is breaking news. But hopefully this is not an April Fool's joke. Hold on, let's look at the date. Crap. It's written on April 1st, but there's apparently a rumor that original cuts of the Star Wars trilogy coming to Disney Plus. As in the
my God, let me tell you how much I don't care.
The theatrical versions. I know, that's why I did it, because I know you don't care. Anyways, first...
Star Wars is overrated. Okay, moving on. Except The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian is a treasure. and Rogue One. Rogue One was good too. Okay, so back to the Avengers. So Dr. Cho is, I guess, Dr. Banner, their professional colleagues or whatever, and there's talk about a party that's happening later. Revelry to come, as Thor says. And so Clint is basically, he had some like burns, and I don't know why I'm like pointing to my abdomen. Nobody can see me.
So what you see here is right here on the abdomen. Clint got shot, homie down. And
he got shot and he got burned, and there's this like tissue regeneration thingy that Dr. Cho made, and she puts him in this little machine. And she's like, oh, well, back in my lab in Seoul, we can do this in, like, 20 minutes.
And, like, Clint's like, I could just sit here all day. You're good looking. It's okay.
And somebody makes a joke about, like, well, what about your girlfriend? And Clint's like, well, I don't have a girlfriend. That won't come up again. So Steve is basically, also should be noted, Maria Hill now works for the Avengers. We saw hints of that, of her taking a polygraph at Stark Industries. So Steve is the boss and Tony is the money. He pays for everything, as he pointed out. Strucker has been turned over to NATO, because that makes sense. Okay.
So thought it was Interpol. Thought it was Interpol.
Nope, NATO. See, Interpol would make more sense. Anyway, but so Steve identifies Wanda Pietro when he's in the field, and then later Wanda, as enhanced individuals, so people with powers. In this case, Maria Hill figures out that the two enhanced are Wanda and Pietro Maximoff. They are twins who were orphaned at age 10, and they are from Sokovia. He's fast and she's weird, basically, is the definition of his powers. Because Wanda's powers are about as consistent in any medium as continuity is. So, according to the files that Maria has, she claims that they volunteered for Strucker's experiments. And she makes a comment of, like, what kind of people would, you know, volunteer for something like that? And Steve's like, yeah, what kind of people would let a German scientist experiment on them to protect their country? And Steve doesn't seem unsympathetic. We know that Sokovia has never been, like, a happy, you know, joyful land. And we learn a little bit more of their backstory as we get going in this film. But a lot of people were annoyed about this whole thing of, like, oh, they volunteered for Strucker's experiments. Well, first of all, they didn't volunteer for Strucker's experiments. They thought they were joining S.H.I.E.L.D., which is revealed later on in the movie. And Steve is actually kind of sympathetic. Like, these are two kids that have no future in a country that is arguably not the safest place in the world, with the most, you know, amazing economy in the world and the most, you know, totally non-corrupt government there could ever possibly be. So, like, it's natural that they would want to do something to protect their country, whether it's from foreign invaders like Stark Industries, which we'll talk about later, or whatever. So it's not surprising. And S.H.I.E.L.D. and HYDRA was embedded very far deep into S.H.I.E.L.D. to the point where, like, people didn't even know about it until Steve found out about it, figured it out with, you know, help. So Stark has, like, a droid-making factory that's kind of, like, below his lab. Thor wants to take the scepter back to Asgard, but they ask for, like, a 3-day furlough to study it. So Banner and, so Clint says he will live forever and that he has no girlfriend. And Dr. Cho is invited to go to the party, and she kind of looks at, like, will Thor be there? which is very cute. Dr. Cho's actress is so beautiful. Oh my God. Like, I want to see her in everything. I really hope she comes back in some capacity.
I want to say something, but then spoilers. So when we get there, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Later in the film, because remember something happens to her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. So there's Jarvis, but there's also like something else. So Strucker, there's like an AI. They think that the scepter is the key to making Ultron, which is, I guess, something that Stark and Banner have just like been, you know, tossing ideas back and forth. Like, hey, let's make a robot. That, what could possibly go wrong?
Piece of our time.
Yeah, that line won't be repeated again or anything. So they think that the staff and the Iron Legion are the key to Ultron. They also mention something called Veronica, which is like an anti-Hulk measure. And Tony makes a quip about Veronica, and Hulk's like, don't be mean about Veronica. I helped make her. And Tony has this idea about a suit of armor around the world and peace in our time. And it's just so cute. It makes me want to hurl. So Stark and Banner and Tony get to work on Ultron. They hit some roadblocks, and it seems like they failed. And Jarvis says that they'll continue running scenarios, but that they should get ready for the party. But something was successfully integrated. Dun, dun, dun! So Ultron meets Jarvis, or Jarvis meets Ultron, who gets, like, activated. And Ultron kind of feels weird.
The probably the best way, this is where you take the water break. The best way to really put this is that Ultron is waking up, and Jarvis is really there more monitoring Ultron for Tony. And as Ultron is kind of like gathering its bearings, Ultron starts like accessing the database to like learn rapidly. And then he goes, oh, Tony. And then he recognizes the piece of our timeline.
So Ultron was, the idea behind Ultron was he was created to like help the Avengers, and Jarvis recognized Ultron, but Jarvis sees something dangerous in Ultron seemingly. And then there's kind of like a fight of the minds, and Jarvis is seemingly destroyed, and Ultron begins building a body. This is after Ultron does like a deep dive of the internet, which, like, granted, if I did a deep dive into the internet, I probably want to destroy the world too. I'm on Tumblr. Like, that tells you everything you need to know.
Tumblr is the end of the world.
Anyway.
I think Twitter is right up there too.
I think Twitter is far more murderous. It's more instant. Twitter is more instantaneous. So if anything would cause the end of the world, I would blame Twitter.
Probably, right. Yeah. Not Ultron, but Twitter.
So the whole Steve's, let's see. So the party, there's World War II vets that are there. Sam is there. War Machine is making like a joke. And I guess he has like this like story that he keeps telling about how he like dropped something in front of the doors of the palace of some dictator. And she's like, boom, you looking for this? And everybody gets a laugh out of it except the Avengers. And they're just like, oh, cool. It's another Tuesday. Well,
let's backtrack that a little bit. He tells the story first to the Avengers, and they're just kind of like, that's cool. Good job, Brody.
And
it's
just that every time the story kills, except with these guys because they're weirdos.
But then later on, he tells the story later on in the party, and the people start laughing, and Rhodey just has this look of like reaffirmation on his face, like, yeah, I told a good story. I'm good.
Yep. Like, so Thor and Steve are talking in front of a group of veterans, and Steve is given this drink and says, oh, this was harvested and made and blah, 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 bullshit, Asgard's bullshit, and it is not for mortal men. And Stan Lee, who's wearing a World War II vet cap, is like, oh, you know, oh, neither, like, this was not meant for mortal men. And he says, well, neither was Omaha Beach. And, like, stop trying to scare us, Blondie, like, pour it in. And then Stan Lee is promptly carried out of the party as he says, Excelsior! So I think the fact that Steve has friends that are World War II veterans is the cutest thing ever. I love that. So then we have this weird scene of Nat and Bruce flirting with each other because we really needed a romantic side plot in this movie. We didn't. So Steve and Nat kind of flirt for a while, and then Nat leaves, and Steve actually gives Banner some, like, advice on romance and whatnot, which was kind of cute, but at the same time, like, why was this necessary? But there's also a funny scene before this with Tony and Thor playing the "my girlfriend is better than your girlfriend" nodes, and Marie Hill has, like, a sassy retort about it, which is great. Something about how, like, there's too much testosterone in the room, which is actually right after Rhodey tells that story.
Yeah, I loved Maria Hill just, like, doing the, like, the, you know, like, making fun of the Avengers and stuff like that. I think it was with Scarlett Johansson.
In the later scene where she's like, "Oh, Steve, he said a bad language word." And Steve's like, "Oh, God, I'm never going to live this down." So speaking of, the party kind of dies down and we get to this, like,
this game of who can pick up Thor's hammer.
Yep. So Hawkeye fails, then Tony's fails, then Tony gets the suit, his armor hand, and him and Rhodey with their armored hands fail together.
And then, I love the bickering between the two. It's like, "Are you trying to help me?" It's like, "Yes, I'm trying to help you. Are you pulling?" It's like,
so then we get to Steve, and what's actually really funny is, like, the hammer moves, but it doesn't lift, and Thor kind of has this look on his face, and the Russos actually confirmed this, thank you, that Steve actually could lift the hammer, but Steve is just too nice to lift the hammer and make the others feel bad.
Well, not only that, but he also, it wasn't that he didn't want to make the others feel bad, it's that he didn't want to try to embarrass Thor at the time.
That too.
Yeah, but also timing is also everything.
This is true. And then they offer Nat to, like, try. Oh, also Banner tries to lift the hammer and he, like, pretends like he's about to, like, he thinks he's about to Hulk out, and then it doesn't happen. And that's like, so then somebody offers the hammer to Nat. She's like, "Oh, that's not a question I need answered." Let's see.
But then
everybody's like, "Oh, the hammer is glitched or whatnot." And Thor's like, "Oh, yes, of course. But, you know, there's a much simpler explanation."
Oh, that's what it was. Hawkeye said it has to be like a thumbprint.
Yeah. And then Thor's like, "Oh, yes, you're probably right. But then there's also a simpler explanation." They're like, "Oh, what's that? You're all not worthy." Legit.
But then after this happens, we now start hearing the voice of Ultron, which brings awareness to the others. And I'm going to put this out there now. James Spader did a great job of Ultron with what he had to work with. Yeah.
So Ultron confesses how he killed Jarvis. He admits.
He doesn't say who he doesn't say who he killed. He just said he killed somebody.
Bruce recognizes that it's Ultron. He plays the peace in our time moment. And he contributes. He basically comes to the logical conclusion. The logical quote unquote conclusion that, like, peace in our time means the destruction of the Avengers.
Yeah.
Basically there's a fight and Ultron is seemingly destroyed or he flies away with another suit of armor. But there's a scene where he's, like, dying. It's like, "There are no strings on me," which is probably the only reason that, like, this is one of the few benefits of Disney owning Marvel, that we could use that stuff.
And it's from the old school animated Pinocchio, which is always awesome. Great movie.
Isn't there only one animated Pinocchio?
American-made? Well, no. Disney has theirs, and then there's other companies that do kind of their third-party knockoff versions. Like, there's
the version is still better.
Yeah, the Disney version is still obviously the best, but
except for the Soviet version, you mean?
What Soviet version?
There is a very good Soviet version of, well, it's not strictly Pinocchio, but it's basically Pinocchio. It's literally the exact same plot. He's just not called Pinocchio. He's called Buratina.
Mm.
Anyway.
Never made its way over here. I'm sorry.
YouTube. True. All right. So so Ultron escapes into other armor and activates stuff in the Strucker bunker. Ultron has rage. Thor chokes Stark. Everybody's kind of mad at Tony because he made Ultron. Ultron also takes the staff.
Which is the real reason why Thor choked Tony, because...
Yeah, and Dr. Cho asks why Ultron went bad, and Stark kind of just, like, laughs, and he shows, like, his view that, like, Avengers... basically, like, Steve thinks that Avengers should be, like, different, should be, like, better than S.H.I.E.L.D. and, like, stuff like that, and Stark wanted an anti-alien, basically, defense system. And Tony's like, remember when I, you know, saved New York? And Rhodey's like, nope, never came up in conversation. So the humor in this movie is actually very good. There's some really good quotable one-liners.
Watch your mouth.
So then Wanda Language. And Pietro go to this abandoned church in Sokovia, and Ultron is there. And the church is at the center of the city, which is a weird note that Ultron makes. Wanda tries to look inside his head, but she can't. And then Ultron kind of, like, reveals himself that he's, like, a giant... upgraded suit of armor, and Stark's fears, Tony's self-destruction, the end of the Avengers. That's when it's revealed why Wanda let him take the staff. Wanda hopes Tony would destroy himself, or that he'd be corrupted by the scepter. Ultron promises to end the Avengers to save the world, basically, and Wanda and Pietro are, like, on board with this because they're pissed at Tony Stark because it's revealed that Tony's, like, tech, his bomb when he was making weapons, was one of the things that was used to blow up the, like, place where they lived with their parents and whatnot. But there's a bigger picture here. And the Stark is the key to tearing the Avengers apart. So Pietro has little, he talks about, oh, you want the bigger picture. Well, I have a little picture of, like, his family and how there's a bombing. And the shell that hit their building had Stark written on it. We know that Obadiah Stane at the time was selling weapons to a lot of different parties that Tony was not aware of, including probably the terrorists or whoever entity it was, whether it was government or terrorist, that bombed Sokovia and killed Wanda and Pietro's parents.
And not only that, but this is also something of a running theme throughout the entire Infinity Saga, all the way up to Spider-Man Far From Home.
Which is...
a lot of the villains or so-called bad guys are people who are somewhat associated with Tony Stark in some form or fashion. Obadiah Stane, Whiplash, Guy Pearce's character in Iron Man 3.
So far, all of these are Iron Man villains.
Yeah, so far, yeah. But then you have Ultron. Is one.
It should be noted that Ultron in the comics was actually created by Hank Pym, who we will meet weirdly enough in the next movie, but it's a different. Yeah.
But the thing is, though, is that, like, as you kind of go on, it's like you notice that, like, technically, when you look at it, even though Thanos, his mission is to, like, do, like, the whole thing with the Infinity Stones, that's kind of a Tony Stark enemy. That's because there's that association between the two. And then you find out in Spider-Man Far From Home, you know, that there's this been long-running thing of, like, and there's a massive speech in that film about people who work with Tony or have worked with Tony or have associated with Tony in some form or fashion eventually become, like, a bad guy to him.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. All right, we're jumping way too far ahead.
Because keep in mind, as we're going to talk about in two episodes.
Yeah. There's another character associated with... Well, this time it's not Tony, it's Howard.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, no. I'm not talking about... No, that's the next episode. I'm talking about two episodes from now.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about for Tony.
All right. So, let's see. They join Ultron for defense and a twisted sense and a different view on justice. Wanda wants to tear the Avengers from the inside, and Ultron is gathering supplies. Ultron, then it's discovered, killed Strucker in the name of peace. Which is, like, fine, but, like, Strucker's a fun villain to have. But I guess anybody can come back now. So there's about Steve's about to do a debrief when he gets the news about Strucker. And then we hear, like, Tony talking, or not Tony, excuse me, Clint talking on the phone. He's like, yes, ma'am. And Steve's like, oh, who are you talking to? And he's like, oh, my girlfriend. Even though, like, two scenes ago, he told Dr. Cho that he didn't have a girlfriend. So, what are you playing here, Clint? So they have a debrief, and they think that Strucker was killed because he knew something. They pull up the, like, paper files on Strucker, and they get a name that, of course, Tony recognizes one guy who's, like, who's a black market dealer, who's not African, but does a lot of black market African sales. And he's one of the few people who has gone and found something in Wakanda. And Steve and Tony both share this look, and everybody's like, well, what's in Wakanda? And they're like, and they pants to the shield. Vibranium! The strongest metal. So they go to this, like, salvage yard on the African coast, and I don't think he's actually named once.
Yeah, he is. Ulysses Klaue.
Yeah, but
Ultron says his name.
Does he really? Because I think I don't think he did.
Ultron says his name. And I think one of Klaue's own henchmen said his name.
Well, anyway, so at the salvage yard, we see that he's Ultron's next target. He makes weapons. There's a commotion. He shoots a gun and Pietro stops bullets. Pietro and bullets is a recurring theme in this movie. And this goes back to my point. Pietro's death was foreshadowed from way back before it actually happened. Step one, from the fact that he barely has any lines in the entire movie. And there's constantly these bullets and Pietro in the same vicinity. It's like, okay, Whedon, you're not that subtle. We get it. And this goes back to the whole thing, because at the time, Fox and Marvel were kind of sharing the rights to Pietro and Wanda, and it was kind of this gray area, because although Pietro and Wanda at the time were mutants, until that got stupidly retconned, fight me, to the fact that they're also Avengers, and it was a giant mess. So I guess they decided to split the difference and, like, okay, Avengers can have, Marvel can have Wanda, but X-Men is gonna have Pietro and do virtually nothing with him as a character. Recognizes the twins as Strucker's pupils. He's sorry that he's dead. And Pietro and Wanda are kind of shocked. Like, they did not know that he died. So he wants to deal with the man in charge. And that's obviously Ultron. He's not a man. They talk business about the vibranium. It's worth billions. And Ultron gives him money. It's like, oh, money. It's such a, like, human thing. And then Klaue makes a very big mistake. He compares him to Tony Stark. And Ultron doesn't take that well. And he rips the guy's arm off.
Yeah, like, underneath the elbow, gone. You know, it's actually funny, because my first couple times watching that, I completely missed it. And then when I watch Black Panther, which is when the character returns, and you see him with the fake arm, like the prosthetic, I end up going back and go, oh, that's
really what that was the first thing I noticed. I was like, hey, it's that guy that showed up in Age of Ultron. But anyway, so the Avengers show up and Pietro goes after Stark. Ultron makes a crack about Steve pretending he could live without a war. There's a couple of quips exchanged between Ultron and Daddy, aka Tony. Tony keeps calling him son, which was kind of funny. We're not really clear at this point in the film why Ultron wants the vibranium. Assumingly, it's to build himself a better suit or body or whatever you want to call it. Also, there's a great funny scene in the use of slow motion where, like, Pietro tries to grab the shield and just, like, hurls him because he's not worthy. And Steve's just there to, like, stay down, tells him to stay down. Ultron plays mind games, and Wanda puts fear inside all of the Avengers. Meanwhile, Banner's at the back of the Quinjet asking if there's a code green. So Thor thinks he isn't infected at first, but Wanda gets them all except Clint. Clint doesn't get mind control because he's been, pretty much been there, done. He just like jams an arrow into her forehead and it electrocutes her, and that pisses her off. So she decides to go after Banner. But here are the things. Each character sees something different. For Thor, he actually sees Heimdall, who has his eyes all white, and he's on Asgard, and something isn't right. And says, oh, they're all dead, and Thor is the destroyer, and it's kind of hinting at, this is the thing that I think hints at Infinity War the most, because it also hints at Ragnarok, and then Infinity War, because you killed us all, blah, 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 blah. Nat has basically a flashback to the Red Room and her graduation ceremony, which is like very obvious in the flashback that the graduation ceremony is her being sterilized. Like, I don't know about other people, but I thought that was very obvious to the point that when she tells Banner about it, I was like, yeah, we know, you don't have to tell us. And Steve sees kind of like a life with Peggy in a dance hall, but it's juxtaposed with like people fighting and one soldier is bleeding. So it's like a happy, not so happy moment. But out of all of the scary moments for the characters, Nat reliving a childhood trauma and Thor getting a vision of a dark and destructive future, Steve's in comparison doesn't seem so bad. So Wanda goes after Banner, and we also learned that Ultron has multiple bodies. Hulk goes on a rampage. The police are obviously no match for the Hulk because, like, duh. And this is, and guns only piss off the Hulk more. So then Tony deploys the Hulkbuster armor while also deploying Veronica. Veronica is not nearly as effective as they, I think, thought she was going to be. Because I think partially this, tackles an old trope with Hulk, whereas, like, the more you hit him, the more powerful he gets. Which actually makes sense to the point where, like, they literally drop a building on him. So, point being, the Hulkbuster armor is cool and all, but it's not really relevant to anything that much. So, Hulk goes on a rampage. Eventually, the Hulk is subdued, and they all have to get away. And there's been no calls for Banner's arrest, and Maria's, like, reporting to them about it. But they decide to go to a safe house that Clint has, and Clint's flying them there, and the Avengers all look like they need a hug and, you know, a bottle of something very, very strong, and they go to a safe house, which is on a farm, and it's revealed that the farm is the home of Clint and his family. He has a wife and two kids, and a little one on the way who was supposed to be named after Auntie Nat. Natasha turns out to be Nathaniel. Meanwhile, we flash to South Korea, where Ultron is there, and he infiltrates the lab to get something called the Cradle, or with the Cradle, and that's the next, like, him, or the body that he wants to use. And this is the part where you were talking about Helen Cho, where the Loki staff is used to basically get her to agree with the plan that Ultron has to get her to make him a slightly more soft tissue-based body. So Nat and Thor both can't quite shake the nightmare. Nat and Bruce have the stupid flirty moment thing for some reason, where they talk about how, like, oh, well, Banner's like, oh, well, I can't have kids, and I can't give you that. And that's like, well, neither can I, so we're both shit out of luck. And
which is kind of ironic, because at the time of filming this movie, Scarlett Johansson was pregnant.
Scarlett Johansson was, in fact, pregnant during the filming of this movie, so a lot of her scenes were filmed earlier, before she was showing, or they used a stunt double.
Yeah. Also, real quick, the actor who played Pietro was Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah. So the actor who plays Quicksilver in the X-Men films, his name is Evan Peters. What's the connection between the two actors besides the fact that they both play Quicksilver?
Were they both in a movie together?
Kick-Ass.
Ah, that movie. Yeah. Okay.
That was also the movie that got Aaron Taylor Johnson on the map. And also, We'll talk about this part later, but it was also the reason why Joss Whedon wanted him for the role.
And it should be noted that before this film, Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen were in, I think, the first Godzilla movie or something. They played a married couple. And this actually is relevant to when I talk about characterization of Wanda and Pietro.
Yeah, actually, they were in the 2014 Godzilla.
Yeah. So, let's see. Banner talks about leaving. Thor actually leaves during the scene. He's like, I had this vision. I have to go find out what it means. So he's gone. Steve and Stark also have this kind of like chat that doesn't really go anywhere. And Tony's like, well, I don't trust a guy without a dark side. I'm like, stop being so dramatic. Like, it's really unnecessary. Steve ripping apart that, like, the wood for the fire was just like so. Okay, I'm okay now. That was just a very nice scene. And then Tony goes to fix the tractor that Laura asks him to look at, and Fury's there. And Fury is kind of annoyed with him, but has intel on Ultron. They talk about the Nexus, which is like the world internet hub in Oslo. And they say that Ultron keeps trying to get like nuclear codes, but something keeps rewriting those codes so that he can't get to them. That's very important. So Tony is going to go and figure that out. They also realize that Ultron needs Cho for a more evolved body. So they go to Korea. Tony goes to the Nexus. And basically at this point, it's just like Steve, Clint, and Nat go to Korea. As Ultron is being uploaded to the body inside the cradle, Wanda begins to sense his mind because, hello, it's also revealed that inside the scepter is the Mind Stone, which is used to essentially give this robot life. Android. So Wanda reads the mind inside the stone and sees destruction. Ultron says that the destruction of the Avengers will lead to a better world, but Wanda and Pietro realize that Ultron means the destruction of the world. Wanda then, as Ultron is lamenting a little bit, Wanda actually like saves Helen Cho from the being controlled by the scepter or the Mind Stone or whatever.
But she gets caught in the crossfire.
She gets blasted a little bit. She's fine.
But we don't know that because we haven't seen the character since then.
True, but like Steve was there and she was conscious. So film logic dictates.
No, she went out of consciousness. She said a few things.
Yeah. So Wanda and Pietro leave in this instance and Cho calls for help and she gets blasted. Steve arrives at the lab and Cho kind of fills him in about the gem. It's the real power inside the cradle is in the gem. And they can't just blow it up. They have to get it to Stark. So there's some great scenes of, like, Steve going after Ultron and fighting Ultron. Nat on a motorcycle. Steve losing his shield. Nat makes a crack of it, like, oh, I'm always picking up after you boys. And she picks up the shield. And this actually is, I don't know if this was intentional, but in the Death of Captain America comic, Nat, I think, actually picks up the shield while on a motorcycle. And then she fights Bucky for the shield, and Bucky takes over the mantle of Captain America. But obviously, like, that, I think that was unintentional, but I just like Nat on a motorcycle. So eventually Nat gets inside the truck. So the cradle...
Wait, hold on. Time out real quick. Did we talk about Fury?
Yes.
Okay. So what people don't know is I'm actually working on the website at the same time, too, to get everything ready to publish this episode.
So Nat is in the truck, and at some point, the truck part, the like engine part, gets separated from the bed of the truck while Nat is still inside trying to rescue the cradle. So she attaches a wire from the Quinjet, which is being piloted by Clint, to the cradle, and she's going to ride it back inside the Quinjet. But at the very last second, as the cradle touches the base of the Quinjet, Ultron pulls her off and kidnaps her.
Kidnapping, because that's what robots do.
Yep. So, let's see. Wanda at this time, so the truck, I think there's something, they end up, like, on a train, and the train is moving, and, well, hold on, let me check my notes here. Wanda and Peter see the fighting on the news, Ultron makes the whole thing fly, Wanda stops the train while Pietro gets civilians out of the way, and Steve's just like, can you help? And they start helping. So I think out of everybody, it seems like Steve is actually the most sympathetic to Wanda and Pietro, which is something that will come up in Civil War a little bit more. I think Steve's just a naturally more sympathetic guy. Wanda's still not a fan of Stark, but Nat gets taken by Ultron. They all return to base, Wanda and Pietro included. Tony finds out that it and reveals to everybody at the base that it was Jarvis that was the friend who helped them. It was like little pieces of Jarvis that were scattered across the interweb. And Tony basically comes up with the idea of, first of all, he saves Jarvis and he convinces Banner to put Jarvis's consciousness inside or programming inside the body. Meanwhile, it should be noted that Thor goes to see Eric Selvig, and then he takes a bath in this mystical pool of water, and he sees, and what is interesting to note is that, like, he only sees all the Infinity Stones that we know of so far. So we don't really get any hints about future Infinity Stones. So you see the Tesseract, you see the Aether, you see the Power Stone, and you see the Mind Stone. You don't see anything else. And Michael's just like processing all of it. He's like, yeah, that's right. So let's see. So Ultron laments to Nat that he's basically like whiny and intimidating, but Banner, Wanda, Steve, and Tony argue over what to do with Vision. Oops, spoiled that with not yet Vision. And Pietro dismantles all of the wiring that's hooked up to the cradle. And then again, there's that bullet of Clint trying to shoot at Pietro, which was, like, so unnecessary, but, like, it breaks the glass, and there's a little bit of fighting. And then Thor returns, and he just, like, lightning strikes the body, and this is, like, such a young, like, a Frankenstein moment, like, give my creature life!
That was a horrible Gene Wilder.
That was not supposed to be Gene Wilder. That was just supposed to be Dr. Frankenstein. It didn't say young Frankenstein. I just said Frankenstein.
That was a horrible Gene Wilder.
Frankenstein. Anyway, so the something bursts forth from the cradle, and it's like a reddish looking man. And Thor says that he had a vision, and Ultron constantly talks about the vision of his body. Like, okay, we get it. His name is Vision.
Well, not only that, but one of the interesting things is that. He obviously takes on the name of Vision because of what Thor said, but he also takes on, per se, an appearance of Thor.
Yeah, there's a cute moment where he like, oh, Thor has a cape. I should have a cape too. Adorable.
I think it's also the fact of that Thor, while yes, Vision is the creation of Tony and Banner, it's really the ultimate creation.
Well, Tony, Ultron, Dr. Cho, Banner.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Well, putting Jarvis into Vision was Tony and Banner. But then...
the body is Ultron and Dr. Cho. But then the life force, quote-unquote, is Thor. The lightning strike.
Of Thor. And that's why I think at the end, Vision relates more to Thor.
Yeah.
Because... Thor was the one who gave him life.
Thor mentions the Infinity Stones, and this is the first time that the Infinity Stones are mentioned outside of like on
Guardians Earth. Of the Galaxy.
Mentions them on Earth. No, on Earth.
Oh yeah, on Earth. Yeah, on Earth is the first time they're mentioned, but it's the third time that they're mentioned in the.
It is the third time. So it was first mentioned at the end of Thor: Dark World, then in Guardians of the Galaxy, now in Age of Ultron. So Thor talks about the gem and it's the Mind Stone and the Infinity Stones or whatever. And that Stark is right the Avengers need to work together, blah, 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 blah. So Vision is like a combination. He's not quite Jarvis. He's not quite not Jarvis. He's something else. Although ironically, like, which is the amazing part here is that Paul Bettany, who is the voice of the Vision, also gets, or of Jarvis is also the Vision. And this is the magic of Marvel that I was going to talk about, that, like, I started to talk about last episode. It's the fact that, like, for a lot of people, Marvel didn't just make their career, it saved their career. And this is something Paul Bettany mentioned in an interview. He talked about how there was a point where, like, his manager or somebody told him that, like, oh, like, there's no roles out there for you. Like, I think you're done. You're never going to get another role.
Yeah, and his last big role was, trying to remember. It's the one with Heath Ledger, the medieval film.
A Knight's Tale? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what it was. A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger. That was like
anyway,
the...
But, wow, that's unfortunate because I think he's a fantastic actor.
He is. And to piggyback off what you said, you know, him getting the role of doing the voice of Jarvis in Iron Man obviously helped revitalize his career, but...
But being Jarvis, I think, is what set it over that threshold.
Yeah, but and I was reading in the notes real quick, for the character of Vision, Joss Whedon was pretty much set that Paul Bettany was the only person who could play the role of Vision, just like how only James Spader could play Ultron and how Aaron Taylor Johnson could play Pietro. And it took him a year to get Aaron... To get Aaron the degree to do the film.
Honestly, though, like, don't get me wrong. I think Aaron is a great actor, but, like, I don't really understand Whedon's, like, attachment to him. Like, any... With the amount of... With how little screen time Pietro got, you could have put in anybody with a young and toned, like, body to play Pietro. Like, Pietro was absolutely wasted in this movie.
Yeah, I think what it also is that... I think there was supposed to be more for him, just like how with most scripts are, there's always more to scripts, and then as scripts are filmed,
well,
stuff gets cut.
Well, if you believe Whedon, the whole thing was, like, this movie was not as good as it could have been because, like, oh, Marvel was mean to him. And, like, I think Whedon has a big enough ego that he doesn't quite realize that, like, yes, this is your movie, but this is not like making a movie outside by yourself.
You have to be part of this whole storyline that's spanning multiple films.
Whedon, it shows in this movie that Whedon very much wanted this to be a sequel to the Avengers, not like a next Avengers movie within the phase of the MCU. And it really shows. And, like, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think there was a distinct lack of balance because it kind of felt like he wanted to spite Marvel when I think I would... It's kind of like the Snyder Cut. Like, I would have loved to see what, like, a pure Marvel Vision would have looked like for this movie more than I would have liked to see what a Whedon Vision looked like for this movie.
Kind of like how with Batman versus Superman. Or not Batman versus Superman.
I said Snyder.
No. It was Justice League. That's what it was. Yeah, we wanted to see the Snyder Cut, not the DC Whedon Cut.
I mean, personally, after Batman versus Superman, I don't care about the Snyder Cut. Like, I'm sorry. We can do an entire episode of how bad that movie is, but anyway.
I love the movie, and we will eventually get to it at some point.
Well, then it's going to be an argument, guys. Careful, there might be torches and pitchforks.
From Boston and D.C. Well, technically, you're in Maine.
Actually in Boston.
Yeah, you're technically in, what, Maine right now?
Yep.
Yeah, you're technically... Maybe by the time we get to that episode, you'll be back in Boston.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see.
If people notice in the archives, you can see every episode that's lined up for the show in the near future.
Yeah, thanks. That's what we need in the middle of the episode. So, Steve...
They know what we're doing! They know that we're doing the MCU! Of course we're going to be...
So Stark has another AI that we will meet in a couple of other movies called Friday. You know, because his girl Friday. Who has, like, is it an Irish accent or a Scottish accent? I think it's a little bit more Irish.
I think it's Scottish. It could be
Anything
Irish.
Anything is possible.
I'm not sure. It's British.
It's British. We'll just go with that.
Actually, I just learned this from Ben, who is my co-host on Awesome Mania, because he's from Portsmouth, UK. So, Britain is England,
Wales.
Scotland, and Ireland, and Wales.
Northern Ireland.
No, he said so Ireland.
Part of Ireland.
Yeah, but anyways, because the running joke is that Drew McIntyre, who from Scotland, if he beats Brock Lesnar for the universe or for the WWE title, he is the British champion. But if he loses, he's just Scottish.
Yeah, I can believe that. So we go to Sokovia and they go after Ultron, and Ultron has built kind of like this bomb, which is like at the core of this like whole thing. But Pietro and Wanda are pretty much easily welcomed into the fold. They're going to help fight Ultron because Wanda says like Ultron doesn't see the difference between saving the world and destroying it. And I think that's a really incredible line. And that tells you a lot about like a lot of things. So I love that. So Wanda and Pietro start evacuating the city. Thor finds this bomb-like object that is in the church. There's a point where like the entire thing. Oh, it should be noted that Banner goes to rescue Natasha, and from Nat sends a signal to start to Banner or to Clint through the old spy channels, which is how they know where they are. So Banner goes to rescue Nat. He rescues her. They kiss, and then she pushes him off into this deep dark hole because she needs the Hulk instead of Banner. Because Banner's about to like tell her to like let's run away together. I'm just like, oh, make it stop. So Stark is they're fighting throughout this whole thing. They're fighting like little nerdy Ultra Bots, which is like, you know. But it should also be noted that throughout the course of the movie, Ultron's body becomes more and more intimidating, which I think is really powerful.
Which is actually kind of nice because it's a nice progression for the character throughout the film, because it actually gives that character layers as the film goes on. So at first he's this broken, battered robot that Tony was trying to fix real quick that Ultron just kind of took over. And then from there it just elevated.
So they're evacuating the city. Tony's trying to, and then the city starts to rise. And Tony sees that there's, like, these, like, things that are making it. He's like, I can't really destroy them. There's got to be a way to, like, lower the city down. But Friday says that's not going to work. So he's trying to find a solution while they're fighting Ultron's bots. And they're trying to – but the problem is, like, there's still people trapped in the city. And there's no way to evacuate them. And then da-da-da-da, helicarrier. And it's not just a helicarrier. It's the helicarrier from the Avengers movie. And one of the people inside the helicarrier is actually the kid who refused to launch the helicarriers in Winter Soldier, which is a nice nod, in my opinion. So first of all, Rhodey's there, which is nice. And they release these, like, these little, like, smaller ships to help evacuate people, which is really nice. There's also a really nice scene where, like, Wanda and Clint are, like, in like the ruins of this building, and Clint gives her a nice speech about being an Avenger, and if she walks out that door and blah 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 blah, and Wanda really takes it to heart and just like unleashes her power onto the bots. And we'll talk about Wanda and Pietro. Like, we really need to talk about Wanda and Pietro.
I really love how Clint has become like a coach.
I mean, he has kids, and Wanda and Pietro are basically like 17 in this, so like, why not? And then Pietro basically takes Wanda and he's like, keep up, old man, and runs away with her. So their best option is to escape. That's when the shield comes up, and then Pietro sees the helicarrier and he's like, oh, so this is what shield is supposed to be, which again makes it more obvious that they didn't know they were joining Hydra.
Yep.
So Thor fights Ultron, Vision helps, and oh, it should be noted that when Vision shows up, they're not sure if they're going to trust him, they're not sure who he is, and he's like, well, we got to go and stop Ultron, and he just, like, grabs the hammer and gives it to Thor, and everybody's like, he's holding the hammer.
He is worthy.
Let's
see. Or is that because Thor was the life force of Vision that made him grab the hammer?
Well, we can't use the word life force because the life force is a separate entity within the Marvel Universe.
Shut up, Meg. That gets
very, very complicated.
Shut up, Meg.
We're going to talk about that when we talk about Wanda. Speaking of life force. So the Vision, Thor, Iron Man are blasting Ultron bots with, like, basically they attack Ultron, and, like, you watch his face melt away. It's kind of cool. Hulk gets Nat to the forest or whatever, and they rendezvous. Rhodey's there. So let's see. So basically, they need to protect the core, but they also need to evacuate the city. Wanda volunteers to stay and protect the core, because what they're going to do is, once everybody's evacuated, they're just going to blow the whole thing up because there's no other choice. If this thing goes higher and higher and blows up, then the decimation is going to be higher. And Tony's figured out a way to, like, reduce the decimation. Haha! There's another term associated with Wanda Maximum: decimation. So everyone goes towards the evac, and there's a sweet moment between Wanda and Pietro where she's like, you know, I got this. And Pietro's like, she's like, you need to go. Like, just come get me when everybody's gone. He's like, you can't order me around. I'm 12 minutes older than you. And I'm like, oh, please, honey. So basically the plan is going to be that Tony's going to hit it from the bottom and Thor's going to hit it from the top and goes kaboom in between. I don't know why I'm making gestures. I'm Jewish. I talk with my hands. Like, don't like anybody can see that.
As the narrator shows, the young lady takes her hands and moves it in motion that does things that make hand motions.
So there's a moment where Nat tries to subdue the Hulk. It doesn't work. Clint arrives at the evac, and there's a mom and her kid that we've seen a couple of times throughout the Sokovia scenes. Just a mom and her kid, and somehow they get separated. Which, like, I don't know. I have, like, such a hard time understanding how exactly that happened. Maybe the kid wandered off. But, like, she was holding on to him so tightly that, like, I cannot understand how they got separated. But it crowds, things happen. So she's like, oh, no, my baby. So Clint goes after the kid. Meanwhile, Ultron is in the Quinjet and, like, blasting and shooting at things. So Hulk drops Nat off, goes into the Quinjet, throws Ultron out of the Quinjet, and Ultron basically says something like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And then he takes off, and then Hulk takes off in the Quinjet. Clint goes to cover the kid from the shooting that Ultron is doing from the Quinjet, and this is when Pietro dies. He manages to put a car in front of Clint and the kid and Ultron's blasts from the Quinjet.
No, he pushed them out of the way.
Either one.
Yeah.
Point is, he protects them and he gets shot himself. And then there's this whole, like, you didn't see that coming line gets, like, thrown a couple of times, and it's just, And in very typical twin science-y fashion, Wanda feels her brother's death, and it sets her off to the point where, like, all of the remaining Ultron bots just, like, get snapped, essentially, and they turn to, like, dust particles. Oh, look, there was more hinting about Infinity War in Endgame in this. Unintentional, so. But anyway, so Wanda goes after Ultron, and she goes out for blood. She ends up on another train. And this is, I love this scene so much, because Wanda is just, like, so destroyed. And she finds Ultron, and Ultron tells her that, like, if she stays, she'll die. And she says, well, I already did. And she asks him if he wants to know what it felt like. And so she, like, tears out the equivalent of his heart. And then she goes, just like that. It's like, oh. So the whole thing is being destroyed. And Wanda is about to free fall. And then, ironically, ha 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 ha, Vision saves her. The city is destroyed. Tony saves Thor. Nat tries to reach Banner. It doesn't work. He turns her off on the Quinjet. Sokovia becomes basically a crater. There's a one last chat between Vision and Ultron about humanity. And Vision is all smarter than Ultron. Clint comes home to Laura and the kids. And then we've moved from Avengers Tower to Avengers Compound. Cho is there. Dr. Cho's there. Marie Hill's there. And looks like S.H.I.E.L.D. is helping the Avengers move in. Nat FaceTimes with a baby whose name is Nathaniel Pietro Maximoff, or excuse me, Nathaniel Pietro Barton. Banner goes MIA, Nat and Fury have a moment, and they can't quite, Banner's basically gone, they don't know where.
Steve, Thor, and Stark debate the notion of the hammer, which is, like, it kind of reminds me of that scene from Big Bang Theory where the three female characters are debating who's worthy of Thor's hammer or something. It's kind of funny to me. And whether or not the elevator is worthy. The Mind Stone Thor declares is safe inside of Vision. Thor says that too many stones are showing up, so someone's playing a game and he's going to figure out what it is. So Thor goes to find answers and Heimdall opens the Bifrost and takes him away. And Tony just looks at him like, he has nothing for lawn maintenance. And before he leaves, Thor says something that's really funny. He's like, he might not, like everything has an answer, basically, except Tony's existence. which, accurate. And then Tony is about to leave. He says he wants the simple life. Maybe he should, like, build Pepper a farm or something. And
Steve, foreshadowing.
Yeah. And Steve says something about, like, you know, family. Tony says something about family stability. And Steve says, like, the Steve that existed 75 years ago is not the same Steve that came out of the ice. And then we see Steve, who's waiting for, who, like, I guess Nat was waiting for him because she's just, like, still in this kind of, like, crosswalk area of the hub or whatever, and he's like, let's get to work. So they go into this training room when we see Rhodey, Vision, Falcon, and Wanda. And Wanda has a nicer outfit, her hair is like all cute now. And then he says Avengers, and then it cuts off before he can say assemble. And in the after credit scene is the Infinity Gauntlet, and Thanos just like putting it on and says, okay, I'm gonna do this myself. And this is where this movie ends. So first and foremost, parts of this movie were based off the Ultimate storyline. No, you should never base anything off that storyline, particularly when it comes to Wanda and Pietro. Michael, do you know why?
Because I'm Batman.
No, but do you really know why?
No.
Because Wanda and Pietro are hinted at to be an incestuous relationship in that comic.
Oh, kinky.
Really, no, just horribly problematic.
No, note the sarcasm in the way I said it.
I'm going back to some of my earlier notes. So with that in mind, I think this was Whedon's mistake. There are so many amazing storylines and relating to Wanda and being part of the Avengers and Pietro being part of the Avengers and joining the Avengers that, like, why would you base their characterization of Ultimates? Like, just why, Whedon? Why? This is one of the few things I'd like a legit explanation on, because Wanda and Pietro have been a part of the Avengers, and then part of the, and then Wanda was in on the West Coast Avengers team. There's like so many things he could have pulled from, but this is what we get. Now let's talk about the other parts of this. People were complaining about Wanda and Pietro being white. They were complaining about Wanda and Pietro being not being Jewish or not being Romani. So let's explain a couple things here. One, Wanda and Pietro's characterization are one of the most inconsistent things in the entire history of the Marvel Universe. Do you know how many people have been their parents? From Django and Maria Maximoff to the Wizard to Magneto to Mario and Django Maximoff again to the High Evolutionary giving their powers. And that's not even counting Wanda's kids. Okay, so inconsistent backstories, inconsistent drawing, and it's only in like the late 90s, early 2000s, I believe, that Wanda's actually portrayed in a more Romani-esque garb, and I would argue that the Romani-esque garb that she's portrayed in was also like not the best in terms of representation. Something that is later revealed in the comics, but is not touched upon in this movie because there's no time, is the fact that Wanda and Pietro, or at least Wanda, is pagan. She's a practicing pagan. But it is very likely that because of their, like, if they were Romani, even though the actors that play them are not Romani, they would likely be Christian. Now, since this is hosted by a Jew, I need to add one other thing. Wanda and Pietro are not, they're Jewish by heritage. They are, do not consider themselves Jewish.
Sneeze, sneeze, sneeze. More sneezes. As the narrator watches the...
There is, in Russian, there is a proverb that says you sneeze on the truth. me that if you sneeze, you've said something has been said that is truthful. So clearly I'm right. So even if
you told that if you sneeze, someone's just talking smack about you, but okay, we'll go with that too. So
ugh, you Americans turn everything so negative. Anyway, I say that as an American. But even if Magneto is their father, which it depends on the incarnation you believe he's not, or he might be, Wanda and Pietro's mother is Romani. So if you're going by the traditional, like, Orthodox Judaism, they're not Jewish. They do have Jewish ancestry. But again, this goes back to inconsistent writing and changing backstories and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Romani, by and large, are Christian. I believe there are some sects that are Muslim. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that they would have been brought up in a form of Christianity of some kind. That being said, in the comics, Wanda's a pagan. Worshipping the goddess, doing magic, candles. The only thing she's missing is a black cat. That's just a joke. So I don't have issues with the casting. I think Lizzie is actually incredible. I think she really wants to do the best. Lizzie's also one of the people, this is how I truly know that you are destined to play the character, is, so you and I kind of talked about this a little bit, of like, every time Marvel casts somebody to play a certain role, they give them like a little stack of reading materials of like, hey, this is the things you need to read to kind of understand your character a little bit. So Lizzie read a couple of these things and she's like, okay, give me more.
Yep.
And they're like, we can't give you more. And it's not, and partially it's because I think they don't want it because like the character in the film is going to be different than the character in the comics, and they don't want the two to like one to influence the other, even though I think in some ways it should.
Another thing is that the casting of Aaron as Pietro was something that Elizabeth actually helped facilitate herself.
That makes sense because, again, we talked how we mentioned that they worked on a previous project together where, weirdly enough, they played a married couple, but whatever.
They also, I was reading this, but she drew inspiration by talking to her older brother, Trent, and her twin sisters, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
So, like, I really
and that's and that's actually how they were able to work on the twin thing that you talked about.
Love the chemistry, the sibling chemistry, the platonic sibling non-incestuous chemistry, because I think this needs to be said, between Aaron and Lizzie and how they played Wanda and Pietro. Pietro gets, so just like Clint got shafted in the first Avengers movie, Pietro gets shafted in this movie, like really badly. And this is something I noticed in my read-through. Wanda has significantly more lines than Pietro. Pietro's death is constantly referenced and foreshadowed. With the lines that are used, with the things that he says, with this constant thing of him being near bullets. It's almost unfair. Let's see. We talked about this a little bit of like where I would rank this movie in terms of like the main parts of phase two. So from the phase two that we have so far, not counting our next episode, this is the tier. At the very bottom of this tier, we have Thor Dark World. One above that is Iron Man 3. One point above that, or, you know, maybe a couple tiers above that, is Age of Ultron. And then at the very top, as my number one, is obviously Captain America the Winter Soldier that I gushed about two episodes ago because it's one of my favorite MCU films of all time.
And boy, oh boy, are you not going to like this. You want to do the IMDb rating now?
Not yet. I think there's, I don't know if there's like.
You're talking about ranking stuff, you know.
All right, go ahead.
So Captain America, the Winter Soldier, was a 7.7 out of 10. Iron Man 3 was a 7.2. Where is it? Thor Dark World was a 6.9. And Guardians of the Galaxy was an 8.0.
Oh, I forgot about the Guardians of the Galaxy. We'll put them directly after Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Well, Guardians was rated higher than Winter Soldier.
I didn't say it was the IMDb rankings. These are my rankings. They can fight me. Like,
IMDb ranks Avengers: Age of Ultron
as the worst.
A 7.3 out of 10. It is better than Thor: Dark World. It is, I gotta scroll back. It's better than Thor: Dark World, which was 6.9. I hate this. Doesn't want to work with me. And it's actually 0.1 better than Iron Man 3, which was a 7.2.
And I still like my rankings better. So,
well, technically, the way you had it was right, though, because they had it. I mean, Thor: Dark World on the bottom, followed by Iron Man 3, followed by Age of Ultron. It's just that they kind of differ.
It's just that I liked Winter Soldier better than they did. Anyway, I think one of the things that... So there's a lot of things that work in this movie. Like, rewatching this movie, I know a lot of people talked about plot holes in this movie and a lot of, like, other things. And rewatching it again, I don't get that same feeling. I think the story actually makes, I mean, I think it makes a little bit more sense having rewatched it now. I don't see the same problems that a lot of other people saw in terms of Ultron's plans or like why he wants to destroy everything. And I definitely don't see the complaints about Wanda and Pietro. I think that this movie actually illustrated very, and maybe because I was watching it in order to pick up on all of the hints and clues, but I think that, like, Wanda and Pietro's stories make sense. They joined what they thought was S.H.I.E.L.D. In order to protect their country and save them from, like, the likes of Tony Stark, who they saw as a bad guy, which makes sense. They then realized it was Hydra, or maybe they didn't even realize it was Hydra, or they realized it was Hydra to an extent, but maybe did not know exactly what Hydra was. We don't really know what World War II history is taught to children in Sokovia. The other part of this is, like, they have a clear reason to hate Tony Stark. And by hating Tony Stark, they hate anything Tony Stark is involved in, i.e. the Avengers. So then you're dealing with the notion of why they are who they are, why they hate the Avengers, why they are likely to align themselves with Ultron. So it's not that far-fetched because, again, if you look back at the original comics, Wanda and Pietro also started their life on the wrong side of the law for whatever reason, a twisted sense of debt to Magneto or whatever. They joined the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and they were an adversary to the Avengers. And they, at one point or another, could have drank the Kool-Aid of Magneto's, you know, dream of mutant prosperity and human decimation, however you want to call it. So I think there's a lot of unnecessary flack that is thrown towards Lizzie specifically and towards Wanda. That being said, as we go through, just like I kind of talked a little bit about at the beginning, about, I don't remember if I even said this at the beginning or when we were pre-chatting before the recording, but Natasha's characterization is all over the place in this movie as well. There's the John Favreau Natasha, there is the Russo Natasha, and then there's the Whedon Natasha. And the Whedon Natasha is kind of like a soft, sweet badass. The Russo Natasha is more super spy than anything else. And Favreau's Natasha was just kind of like a cold, hard S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who can blend, so I think Favreau's vision aligned more with the Russo's, and Whedon was, like, because Natasha is a character that is a spy and does take on many forms, it is not outside the realm of possibility that all of these things are actually consistent with her character, because she is a spy. The romance between her and Banner is painful to watch. I think it's even more painful than the first time I watched it. It comes out of, like, it's out of nowhere, and I think that it would have been much better to see a friendship similar in the style that we saw between Nat and Steve than a romantic subplot that could have been filled with, hey, more characterization for Pietro, so that we could actually care that he dies. Because that's the big thing about this movie. We have not, they didn't establish Pietro enough as a, we should root for him, we should like him, this is a cool character, before they kill him off. So that his death has an emotional impact on Wanda, obviously, and maybe on Clint, but it doesn't have the same, in my opinion, emotional effect on the audience as it could have. Because we wasted scenes talking about Banner's consistent problems and his romance with Natasha. So this is not the worst of the MCU films. This is not the best of the MCU films. This is just a solid, it's okay. I don't know about you, but I actually went to see it as a double feature. When it came out, they did the screen, they did the director's cut of The Avengers, which was not significantly different than the theatrical cut. There's like a couple extra scenes. And then there was like a 15-minute intermission, and then we jumped into Age of Ultron. So that was fun. So watching the two movies back to back, you really see that Whedon wanted a sequel to The Avengers. He didn't want this as the next step within the greater MCU. And if my options are between, if I have to pick between Whedon and Feige, I'm going to pick Feige. Mostly because I think Whedon does not understand that it's not about him. And I think this is also evident in Justice League. Because instead of finishing the vision of somebody else because he was asked to take over, and it's not like Zack Snyder quit.
Yeah, Zack Snyder had to step away during post-production because his daughter committed suicide.
Exactly. And yeah, instead of just like, coming in and overseeing the post-production, he decided to completely change the a lot of things in the movie. And we could do an entire episode just talking about the DCEU or whatever you want to call it.
And Zack Snyder has come out and said there is a Snyder cut. It's just that Warner Brothers will not release it.
And, like, I think this goes back to just, like, Whedon and his ego that's just gotten a little bit too big for the bottle. And because I know he talked about, like, a lot of expectations from Marvel. And from what I've understood, and maybe you've delved deeper into this than I have, Marvel did not ask him for that much.
No, I think they just wanted him to continue the story.
They wanted him to continue the story. The one thing I remember reading was they asked him to continue the arc of the Infinity Stones, which was done relatively easily with a couple of scenes and the Mind Stone, yeah, or whatever.
And not only that, but also to establish a couple new characters, which was Wanda and Vision.
Wanda, Vision, and kind of continue the setup for the Infinity War.
Yeah.
Or which at the time was just going to be like Infinity War Part 1 and 2 or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Marvel had expectations because this was their universe. They were building this up. This is just another movie in the grand scheme of the other different films that all tied together to lead up to the Infinity, what eventually became Infinity War and Endgame. So Whedon talking about how, like, you know, Marvel was so mean to him is just, like, the most childish thing I have ever heard. Like, you were hired to direct, you're basically being hired to direct a movie for someone else's plan. I think partially the mistake was letting Whedon write the script for this film. But that's a separate conversation, I think. But again, like, this movie is not
But yet bad. Again, most of the directors write the scripts. Because right. James Gunn wrote both Guardians, and actually he wrote the Guardians 3 script.
I'm just shitting on Whedon.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm shitting on Whedon because he deserves it. But like, guys, like, not, although there is one thing that I found odd about this film that wasn't in the first one, and maybe I'm overthinking it, but there's a lot more boob shots, like women's cleavage and like little side glances. And it's not something that I noticed so much in the first couple times I watched it, but it's definitely something I noticed this time that, like, this was unnecessary and it's just a little odd.
I don't recall it, but yet again, I also kind of wasn't paying attention for it. But you want to know something really funny, though? What was the first line said by an Avenger in the film? It's one word.
What was it?
Shit.
Oh, that was Tony's line. Yeah. Yeah,
that was the very first line by an Avenger to start the movie.
Language. And I think, again, like, what we see throughout these films is that different directors have different visions for the characters, which is valid, you know.
But what's also kind of nice, and you start seeing that with, you actually kind of start seeing that with Winter Soldier and Guardians and Ant-Man, like the three good ones of the second phase, that when it goes into phase three, you can see how what happens in Ant-Man then follows into Civil War. What happens in Civil War then follows into Doctor Strange. What happens in Doctor Strange follows into the next thing. Like, they're all kind of cascading into each other at this point now.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think makes Marvel so successful, is that, like, these films were great on their own, but it's also, like, you really like this one puzzle piece, but, like, it connects to a bunch of other puzzle pieces to make an even bigger puzzle.
And something to keep in mind, when you get to Infinity War, pretty much every director outside of Whedon is an executive producer, because they're brought in, like, James Gunn wrote the scenes for the Guardians and Thor. You know, Taika Waititi had stuff to say about, I probably mispronounced his name, I'm so sorry.
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. He obviously had a say on how Thor was going to be done in the Infinity War Endgame and so forth, because they all worked together with the Russos. It was like, it was kind of a big collaboration. Like, I think once they did Winter Soldier and then they did Civil War, it was kind of like Marvel is like, these are the two guys who are going to base the films around. And then everyone's going to kind of work in conjunction with the Russos moving forward.
I would say that, like, again, we're like, I at the time, I definitely liked Russo's vision better. I liked how the characters had, I think, had more layers to them, especially Steve. And, like, I think that this is something I said at the beginning, that, like, the Russos saw Steve as a man trying to find his place in the modern world with all of the new things and new problems that it has.
But at the same time, Steve isn't the focus in Ultron, though, because...
That's true.
Because he's more of the supporting character, while... And here's the thing. This is the one, quote-unquote, defense, air quote, defense of Whedon, is that you still kind of have that with Steve. It's just not at the forefront. Because remember, Steve, while, yes, is still portrayed as kind of the goody two-shoes in Whedon's eyes, there is dialogue in there that has Steve kind of going, like, kind of with that evolution of, like, you know, I just went for this thing, like, especially with Fury. When Fury shows up, like, Steve goes, Fury, you son of a bitch. And Fury's like, whoa, you kissed your mother with that mouth?
Yeah.
And so you kind of see the what happened in Winter Soldier came into this one.
I'm not saying that he didn't watch Winter Soldier and kind of learn from it.
But then 2 movies later, the Russos are still able to pick back up where they left off, not have Age of Ultron damage what they did.
Well, because, like you said, Age of Ultron isn't, there's not a lot of character development for Steve in this film. I think I would argue that out of everybody in this film, he actually has, out of, like, the main characters in this film, he has the least character development.
And not only that, but what they did with, like, and this is where I disagree with the Banner Natasha thing. I think it was a good thing because they're able to utilize it later on in, like, Thor Ragnarok. Because it was a key thing.
Don't get me wrong. Like, the lullaby thing I get, Natasha is the girl. She has the most soothing voice. Banner has feelings for her and she can subdue him.
But then it makes a unique moment when they reunite in Infinity War for the first time. So you have to have you have to have at least something. Whether it's good or not.
You gotta have a very nice friendship.
Yeah.
Or you could have had a friendship, or you could have had this, like, do they like each other or are they just friends kind of moments where, like, you could have done it, I think, a little bit more subtle and still kept that emotion impact that you're talking about without going full blown of like, oh, I can't give you what you want because I can't procreate. And like watching that scene, like, I don't think it's an out of character scene for Natasha or Banner. I just think the whole thing is just awkward as heck.
I think that's also the point sometimes. Sometimes you need to have some awkwardness. You can't just have everything be so perfect. And like, I mean, look at me. Look at me. Look at me. We're joking about this beforehand, about like my dating profile and how we're in this Facebook group and stuff like that, and how I joked about how for the geographical location for pictures, could they put up a graveyard for my profile? Like, do you really think in the world of dating that that's not awkward at all? You know?
No, I understand that. But I think a lot of the reason, one of the reasons that people had an issue with it is like, oh, well, she's the girl on the team, so of course she needs a love interest. And it does kind of come off that way, whether it was unintentional or intentional or not.
Well, see, I mean, but the thing is, though, is that they could have easily have done that with Maria Hill, and they could have done that with Helen Cho.
Yeah, but those are both side characters. They're not main characters.
I think at this point, with how often Maria Hill shows up, I think we can say that she's a supporting main character, or a main supporting character at this point.
I'm going to stick to side character, considering we never really, we see her like very sporadically from here on out.
Well, wasn't her big thing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Or was that just Coulson?
That was Coulson. She appeared once or twice.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I don't hate the Bruce Nat thing as much as I think a lot of other people did, but I still don't like it. I would have much preferred a little bit more of that, like, wait, could this be a ship, or are they just friends? This could be this, but it could be that. I think Whedon went too far too fast down the relationship, the potential romance rabbit hole. That was unnecessary, and I think it took away from other things. Like, a little bit more backstory on Laura and the kids would have been much more important.
Well, I think with Laura and the kids, I don't think they should have been a focus. And I think
I'm not saying a focus.
But I mean, they pretty much said it. They gave you what you needed to know about them, is that this is something that Fury set up for Clint. Plain and simple. That's all it was. It was just something for Clint to get away from the job. And this was something that Fury set up.
Bad example, but there's other things that the attention still could have been given to. Like I said earlier, Pietro.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I think we all agree with that one, that he should have gotten more time and more development.
But, like, Wanda gets a definitive personality by the end of this film. Pietro doesn't.
Well, yet again, well, here's...
Because he's killed off, but still.
Well, here's one thing. You know, also going into this, you know, two characters at this point, you know that two characters are going to come out of this film, two new ones. So could they have made it, maybe that could have been a directive for Marvel. Don't put a lot into this character because it's not going to go after, we're not going to utilize this character going forward after this film's over. So you don't know in a way what kind of directives were put out there because they probably already had a plan to have Vision. And they probably already had a plan to use Wanda, but they probably didn't have a plan to use Pietro. But yet again, also so at the same time, but have,
if but you're going to just take that character and dump him, then like do something with him before you dump him other than like, oh, look.
But also at the same time, you have the X-Men films going out and you have Evan Peters playing the character.
Yeah, his name is Peter. His entire power is to be annoying.
I like some of his scenes, though.
Some of the scenes, but again, this goes back. We could do. I think we need to like. If
we are. You do know we are eventually going to do X-Men.
We talked about it before,
and I told you I wanted to do X-Men because there. I've noticed this because I like to watch the movies.
Okay, one. I refuse to do a single Wolverine movie. They all suck.
But they're all interconnected with each other with the X-Men series.
They still all suck.
That's fine. You know.
We could do like an original trilogy and the, you know, new first class trilogy.
Well, see, here's the thing though. Okay, we're kind of going off topic, but here's the thing though. Because I have all the X-Men movies and I've watched them all in the order that they were released. one of the interesting things about X-Men, just like with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just not better, is that X-Men 1, X2, X3, The Last Stand, they all actually, even the original trilogy, interlocks with the first class trilogy.
I know. I've seen all the X-Men movies. I just don't want to look at them all individually. Like, X2, in my opinion, is, like, the best. Like, I love that movie. But I think there's more to be talked about in terms of characterization and poor adaptations of classic X-Men comics that should make Chris Claremont gather his torches and pitchforks.
I think for him, he didn't care. He was getting paid, he was getting royalties up the ass on that one. But
he's very nonchalant. I said it should, not that it did. Because it definitely made me want to gather my torches and pitchforks for several reasons.
But I actually enjoy it. I actually like some of the story arcs that they do. And I also like how Days of Future Past actually rewrites the timeline.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, well, we could do an entire episode just on our very clearly differing opinions. And like, I don't hate the X-Men. The X-Men were my OG team. They were my introduction into Marvel. The 90s X-Men series is one of my all-time favorites, and some of those episodes still surprisingly hold up very well. They're all on Disney Plus now.
Out of order.
They are out of order. I tweeted to...
Although, interestingly, here's the thing. They have them listed out of order, but if you do the watch all, they do play them in order.
That's so bizarre.
Because I had it where I'm like watching an episode in season 3, and then it'll be like, oh, there's this episode, and then you get out real quick, and it's like, oh, you're actually now in season 4, but wait a minute, this was episode 1 of season 4 right here.
Can we at least agree that Dark Phoenix was a waste of space?
No.
What?
It wasn't as bad as everyone put it out to be.
So boring! They didn't use any of the fun things from the original story!
Like, I mean, they took a different...
literally... All right.
Breathe. Goose Frava. You ever see Anger Management with Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler?
Once, like a bajillion years ago.
Great movie. Watch it 16 more times.
Pass.
You're so mean.
I know. It's like you've only known me for a day. So with all of this in mind, I think it's safe to say that Age of Ultron is an okay flick. I think if you love it, great. If you don't like it, I can see why people wouldn't like it. To the general universe, please stop hating on Elizabeth Olsen. Like, she's not perfect. None of them are perfect. They've all said something stupid at one time or another. I could think of a plethora of stupid things that Mark Ruffalo has said over the last, like, 5 years alone. So please stop hating on Lizzie. She loves Wanda. She loves Wanda so much. But actually, there's one thing that we did not talk about that I think is very important to note about Wanda. Her powers! What are they? Not what they are in this movie. Speaking of inconsistent storytelling, Wanda's powers are, I think, the most inconsistent thing in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Partially because I don't understand where Whedon got the idea that Wanda's powers were like moving things and messing with people's minds. Those are not her powers. Granted, like, her powers are also very inconsistent in the comics. Is it a manipulation of probability? Is it chaos magic? Is it whatever it is? But like, is it literal life force infusion reality warping?
Well, do you think that's what Whedon was making a play off of?
I don't know. I think that
Because that's the thing, like, when people take source material and, like what you're saying, that it's not consistent with Wanda at all, ever,
right? In the comic, it kind of feels like
they kind of can point that out and go, well, because there was no consistency here, we can kind of play with it.
Yeah, but there's consistency in the inconsistency. So, again, I don't hate Wanda's powers as much as other people do, but somebody pointed out, I think on Twitter, that, like, Wanda's powers were a little bit more reminiscent of, like, Jean Grey than they were Wanda Maximoff. I'm hoping that... so we do see Wanda's powers, I would argue, progress As we get into Civil War, as we get into Infinity War, and we see her doing more, and then in Endgame, you're just like, oh, my child. And then we'll see something else in WandaVision. I think there's very simple ways to explain that, but but Wanda's powers are not reflective of the character nearly as much. I like the, like, hand gestures that she worked out with Whedon. That's the one compliment I'll give him about, is that, like, it was cool how the hand gestures were, like, very specific. There was, like, an art to them. Very dancer.
And it was something that carried through into the other films.
It does, because Lizzie carried it through.
Yeah.
Lizzie loves Wanda. She wants to see Wanda do more, and she's so excited to have Wanda delve into the actual powers. I think when she said we're actually going to find out why she's called the Scarlet Witch at San Diego, I died from excitement, just because I'm so excited to see Wanda tackling, like, her actual powers. And so the telekinesis, like, we see, I think, a little bit of a hint at her powers at the end of this movie, where she, like, just destroys piece by piece into dust the Ultron bots. But I think I could do an entire episode just talking about Lizzie's, like, we could do an entire episode on just, like, the characterization of each character. So I think now is probably a good time to stop before this goes into, like, 2 hours.
We're almost at 2 hours.
Oh, God. Okay, I'm sorry if you've made it this far. I'm sorry.
We're 15 minutes away from 2 hours.
God. We can cut out.
So with that, the next up on the docket is Ant-Man.
We're going to shrink down to an entire new universe with Ant-Man.
Yep. And this is actually also kind of like, this is the true beginning now of where, how everything kind of goes hand in hand with each other moving forward by going to Ant-Man. So
we're entering the end of phase two.
It is the end of phase two of Ant-Man. Oh, that's right. That's the explanation real quick. So I said at the beginning of the show,
we're going to end up at 2 hours.
Shut up, Meg. But anyways, so at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that there's a reason that this was not the penultimate end of phase two, and that is for the simple reason that Kevin Feige actually came out and said that with how serious that Age of Ultron was actually going to take, and with how serious and how deep it was going to start with Civil War to start phase three, they felt that it was actually best to end phase two with Ant-Man to have something a little bit more lighthearted to end the phase before going in.
You're going to get a little bit happy, and then you're going to cry some more.
Exactly. That's why. So with that, Sasha, see, look how fast I did that. That wasn't so long. Anyways, where can the people find you on the social medias?
As always, Geeky Captain on Instagram. That's geeky as in G-E-E-K-Y. I don't know if you guys can spell, but you're definitely not seeing you in the followers count. So it's Geeky Captain. It's all one word. And of course, GeekGirl101 on Tumblr.com. I love receiving questions on Tumblr. I have the best, sassiest remarks ever. So please send me your questions. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, and then you can follow me on Twitter at @TheLindenBaum75, on Twitter, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. I can cheat this time because I actually have it right there in front of me because I'm working on the website. But I also have episodes coming out. Friday, we have a new episode of the TXHT podcast. This is an episode that was originally recorded on March 10th. And was supposed to go out March 11th, but due to the coronavirus, we postponed it. It is now going out this Friday, tomorrow, because we're releasing this on the day after we record this episode, which today is April 1st, tomorrow is April 2nd, so April 3rd is when that episode comes out. We have new episodes of Power Dorks coming out now. We've had two episodes come out this past week, and yeah, I know. I'm doing the X75 thing. X75 Productions produces this podcast. I could promote everything else that comes out of this production company. Don't you rush me, damn it. But we're actually about to record a couple more episodes of Power Dorks with special guest host Ben Taylor from Awesome Mania. And, of course, this weekend is WrestleMania, so Ben and I will be doing a bunch of content in the near future on WrestleMania. So with that, Sasha, take us out.
Thank you to our negative 12 listeners, and we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and evening. And please tune in next time when we're shrinking down, we're getting the count, and I'm going to be gushing about Cassie Lang pretty much the entire time as we delve into Ant-Man.
With our negative 18 followers.